Welcome to Nightlife, the podcast.
Meet George Jetson. His boy Elroy. Daughter Judy.
Do you remember the Jetsons, that cartoon series about the, well, misadventures more than adventures of a futuristic family? If you do, you might remember, well, it was the vision of the smart home, at least from a 1960s imagination. Automatic doors, toothbrushing robots. Remember the menulator that cooks entire meals for you with the press of a few buttons? And of course, we've kind of got Rosie the Robot, except Rosie the Robot not only did domestic chores, she also played games with the kids. However, if you were to compare that to another TV series, more recent, Black Mirror, have you watched that at all? It's a much darker version of, well, almost the smart life, but smart home in particular, domestic assistant dolls for children and teenagers with always on microphones. All their interactions are, unbeknownst to the children, recorded, uploaded to company servers for commercial gain. Home automation assistants run by a twin digital consciousness. The question is the future of our smart home still the Jetsons? Or are we looking into a black mirror? Kat Marks is a data scientist at Embers Advisors. She's got a master's degree in public policy from the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, and she is looking into the future here on Nightlife, at least the future of our homes. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Ben. Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Well, I'm asking you to look, well, somewhat into a crystal ball. Maybe. Look, when we're talking, let's just do some basics. When we're talking about smart devices and smart homes, what are we talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with smart home devices, we're talking about any connected electrical item that can be controlled or monitored remotely. So, for example, a smart speaker that you can control with your voice or phone is a smart home device. And then a smart home is when multiple devices are connected with each other and work together as an ecosystem. So you might have smart lights, a smart fridge, and a smart washing machine that are all integrated with a central system, for example, like a Google Assistant.
Yeah, we'll get into the language, the shared and common languages that are being used and the systems and that kind of thing. But let's talk about the appeal. You know, obviously we were wanting this from a very, you know, from decades ago, a la the Jetsons. We've dreamed of it for decades. So what's the appeal to install the smart home?
Yeah, that's totally right. I actually didn't realize that the Jetsons was made in the early 1960s, which is further in the past than I thought. And it's an amazing visionary television show. But there's a couple of reasons why you might be looking to make your home smarter. So firstly, just energy efficiency or cost effectiveness. So you can, for example, ask devices to adjust your air conditioning based on whether people are home. Or if you have a smart water sprinkler, it can check the weather and then only water your garden if it isn't forecast to rain. So, you know, saving the environment, but also saving you money.
I actually didn't know there were smart sprinklers. I mean, this makes sense, but I hadn't realized we'd moved into the garden and outside of the home with smart devices.
Yeah, I mean, because there are smart sprinklers, but also because there's smart plugs, you can turn any electronic device into a smart device by using a plug and then remotely turning it on or off. So actually almost any electrical device in your home is a smart device or can be a smart device.
Can be a smart device. See, I automatically think security, Kat. I mean, that's one of the classic areas, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So you've got smart security cameras that can detect motion and notify you even if you're not anywhere near your home, if it sees movement when no one's supposed to be there. So it does, you know, that security is a big reason why people are installing smart devices.
I just had a situation where one of my sisters is, you know, this is the time of year when we're all house sitting someone else's house while they go on holidays. And you say, oh, we'll look after your house. And one of my sisters is house sitting another sister's house. And the sister rings up and says, I don't think you've locked the door properly. We've just got an alert, you know, and they're 4 hours drive away saying, hey, the house isn't secure. And this is just modern life now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that, you know, a decade ago you couldn't do. Although I think a lot of the notifications tend to be people's like cats walking past their cameras rather than intruders. But it is really good if there is a genuine security issue.
Yeah, well, or not. I was like, are you going to run home? And I was interested to know, could they lock it from afar? Could they, you know, did my sister have to go back and lock it properly? Because all of these things are different. So we were talking about the appeal. There's the energy efficiency. There's the security. What are some of the other things that are appealing about these smart devices?
For sure. I mean, I think one of the most exciting potentials of smart homes and smart devices is for people who are aging or have chronic illnesses or disabilities. I think, you know, really these devices and homes are going to enable people to live at home for longer. And if you've got limited mobility, you know, things like smart lights, blinds and TVs enable you to control your home setup with your voice or your phone, which is really amazing. And then, you know, smart doorbells have facial recognition now, so if you're blind or if, you know, even if you just want to know who's at the door, they can often tell you who's there, which is really exciting. And it will be really exciting to see that technology develop.
Yeah. And then I guess the classic and the one that we are using without even really realizing we're using it, you talked about smart speakers. That's probably the most common device, I would imagine, in Australian homes. And that's, you know, that's entertainment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, smart speakers are the most commonly used device in Australia. And yeah, just comfort and entertainment is a big reason why people are buying smart devices. So, you know, home managers like Google Nest will work with your devices and create automations personalized to you. So if you want to set a routine where your coffee machine makes you a coffee at sunrise and your lights turn on to 50% brightness, that's something that you can do. Or if you have a smart robot, you can, you know, you can send it out to clean your floors when nobody's home, for example. So there's just a lot of convenience and comfort reasons why people have smart devices and are setting up smart homes.
Yeah. Now that you've said smart robot, the question is, are there dumb robots? You know, I'll kind of assume they're all smart. It's sort of when you start talking about the good scissors, are there bad scissors out there? But I'm digressing. If I move into scissors, they're just ordinary devices. We're only interested in the futuristic ones. On Nightlife, you're listening to Bern Young, and my guest is Kat Marks. We're looking at the future of the home. In a way, we've been talking about the present. This is the now. So can we look at some of the trends? What are we seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so it's been an exciting year. One of the biggest developments in the last year has been the release of home assistants that are powered by large language models or generative AI. If you're not familiar with that term, so ChatGPT is an example of generative AI. And these provide the promise of greater personalization and predictive automation with smart homes. So this year, Amazon and Google have released the Alexa Plus and Google Gemini. With the Alexa Plus, the idea is that it's more conversational than the previous Alexa and more tailored to you. So you can tell it things about yourself, like your taste in music, for example, and it will use that to personalize your experience. And so,
does it already know? Like, have you got to program it, or is it assessing what you've already been listening to? Because in a way, that's what you know, any of the streaming services are doing all the time as well. Are you programming it to say, this is what I'm like? Is it asking you questions, or does it just know, Kat?
Is it just a psychic tool? It's actually both. So you can tell the device, you know, I'm allergic to tomatoes and I like jazz, and then when you ask it for recipes, it will be recommending recipes that don't have tomatoes in it, or it will be thinking about what you've told it when it's putting on music. but it also makes inferences about you and learns about you based on your interactions over time, which is what you're talking about with recommendation algorithms with Spotify or streaming services. It does the same thing.
And what are the, you know, the users saying? Because if these products are now already out in the marketplace, have they been, you know, do they say that these latest, greatest are better?
Yeah, the reviews have actually been a bit mixed. So online people are saying that the new home assistants are indeed more conversational, but they're also pretty buggy and tend to get simple things a little bit wrong. And some people are saying they actually preferred the older, slightly more clunky but more reliable devices. And it's probably, you know, if you've used ChatGPT the same way that ChatGPT can be, can do sort of extraordinary things like write poetry, but then sometimes it messes up basic maths. Like I asked it to calculate something for me the other day and it was, it got it like completely wrong. So I think we're seeing the same issue with these Gen AI backed home devices.
I'm actually thinking back to the Jetsons. Now, the Jetsons is before your time, Kat, I think it's fair to say, but I was watching the Jetsons as a kid and I'm pretty sure Rosie the Robot used to get things wrong as well. I mean, even think the menu later got things wrong.
Totally. It's very similar. I've been watching the Jetsons in the last few days and it was a great prediction of the future.
Exactly, including how they get things wrong sometimes. I mentioned this universal language so that you can have different devices, but they still will talk to each other, even if they're not all the one kind of brand. Without getting too geeky, what's the language they're using or what's the systems and why is that important?
Yeah, it's a really exciting development that's happening behind the scenes, but I think will have a big impact for people, which is that there's a common language that hundreds of companies across the industry have agreed to called Matter. And this year they've come together to create a formal certification program for Matter. And Matter is a common language that allows smart home devices to communicate with each other, even if they're made by different companies. So a big gripe has been that, you know, you either have to buy devices all from one company, or if you buy devices from different companies, they sort of struggle to work in a streamlined way with each other.
Matter, it seems a weird name for it. So Matter is the language. And what's Thread other than something I'd put through a needle and fix my, I don't know, clothes?
Yeah, so Thread is a technology that improves the connections between devices and allows them to talk to each other without having to rely on Wi-Fi. So when we've got Matter and Thread coming in together, it's just really exciting because we're going to see smart devices from different brands working together in a much more streamlined way, which is going to improve the experience a lot. And IKEA has actually announced that it's launching 21 new smart home products in 2026, and they're all built to work with Matter. So that will be lighting, sensors, and control devices as well.
Yeah, I actually am not using any other than the smart speaker. I realize I'm a fairly standard home. I don't know how many of us are left. Do you think, I mean, if IKEA's doing it, this year, then that brings it into the everyday for sure, doesn't it? So how do we have stats or anything on just how many people are really integrating their homes?
No, I couldn't find any stats. All I could find was something from the ACCC a few years ago that was saying that the majority of Australians have smart home devices in their home and most of them are smart speakers. I think, Bern, you're probably the common scenario where people might have one or two devices, but it's more rare that people have these, you know, smart homes with systems set up. But I think with Matter, I think we're going to see it becoming a lot more common.
Yeah. Well, let's have a look at what the future looks like, because in a way that's the whole point of us talking tonight. Kat Marks is my guest and we're looking at the future of our homes and how integrated they will become. What are we in for, if not in just 2026, but generally in the next few years? I don't know if we can quite go a decade. There'll just be so much change, I would imagine, in this area, Kat.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think what the vision is for a number of companies is that Rosie the Robot comes to life. So there's a company called 1X that's based in California in the US. that's developed a domestic robot called Neo. And you can watch videos of Neo. Neo's very quite benevolent looking and cute. And it's a human-like robot with microphones and 360-degree vision that's advertised to be able to open doors, walk upstairs, and do domestic chores like stacking dishwashers, taking out rubbish, and then also telling you where you left your keys because it's got the video memory.
Surely our keys are going to be integrated so that we don't even lose them anymore. It's like Find My Keys. We've got to find my phone app. We must have Find My Keys by now.
It's probably the best use I can think of. It's amazing.
So Neo, how far away is Neo from even, and I imagine wouldn't be cheap?
No, so Neo is $20,000 US and you can pre-purchase it and it will be shipped in 2026 in the US with international rollout planned for 2027. But I mean, there is a bit of a caveat there. I've been reading some articles on it and it's apparently still very much in training mode. So if it can't do something, then an employee from 1X wearing a VR headset will remote in and control Neo and help it perform the task. And the idea is that, if you're an early adopter, you're helping Neo to learn from real-world experience, and so ultimately it can get smart enough to perform tasks on its own. And the company, you know, it's obviously going to be taking a lot of your data, and it describes that you sharing your data is part of a social contract where you get to be an early adopter, but you're also helping it to improve at the same time.
Yeah, but it will obviously, quite clearly, it has to know a lot about your home, so already, you know, these little alarm bells go off. You know, you've got an employee of a company over in the States somewhere wearing a VR headset looking around your house. Certainly you'd want to make sure you've, you know, gotten dressed properly. and then just generally they know the layout of your home. It is, yeah, of course these sorts of questions come up with it. How many domestic robots are coming?
So the Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show will start on the 6th of January, and the rumours are that there'll be a number of companies unveiling their newest product lines, and robotic home assistants are expected to be a big feature. And as an example, LG has announced it will be displaying its home assistant called Cloyd at the show. We don't know much about Cloyd at the moment, but this will be really exciting to see what the competitors to Neo look like.
Cloyd, C-L-O-I-D. Okay.
Yes.
Cloyd. Okay, that's just a few days away, so I guess we'll wait and see what happens. That's such a massive consumer electronics show over there in Las Vegas. So that is, if you want to know what the future holds, that's the place to be in the now. You talked about sharing data, Kat. I mean, perhaps to a degree, we're just so used to it now. We've stopped, I don't know whether to worry about it more or just worry about it less because it's so common. Is there now an unprecedented level of data sharing?
It is unprecedented when we think about smart devices, just because they, especially when they're in your home, they're seeing so much more than ever before. And consumers just aren't fully aware a lot of the time about how much data has been collected on them. And if we think about smart TVs, where we've seen some privacy concerns, many smart TVs are using a technology called automated content recognition. So automated content recognition is built into smart TVs and gathers the audio and visual data on what you're watching and then uses that data to identify exactly what you're watching at any time. Interestingly, I'm not sure if you used the app Shazam.
I have used it, yeah. Pretty often, actually.
So it was actually from the technology that was created for Shazam, which allowed people to identify music by playing a few bars. It's now identifying what television show you're watching or what's on your screen at any time. I was reading a paper from 2024 that was saying that some TVs are collecting data as frequently as every 10 milliseconds, which I think is 100 times per second, and then uploading data on your individual profile several times a minute. And it's not just what you're watching. It's, you know, your location, potentially your gender, your age, your marital status. And it's not just going to the TV company. They can also sell that information as well.
Wow. every 10 milliseconds while you're watching TV, you'd have to wonder why you would even go to that length, because I know we do change channels pretty quickly, but we don't change channels that quickly. So, you wonder why they'd need to collect that much data. So this data collection, the sale of it, seems like an obvious question. Why is it so concerning, do you think, Kat?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I mean, this is a multi-billion dollar industry, and there's companies that have stated that they're actually earning more from selling your data than they are from actually selling smart devices. So, this is huge. And, it is concerning. I think at first you might just think like, oh, this is quite positive. I would prefer to be marketed things that I actually want rather than things that I don't want. Like, I want to log into Netflix and be recommended Stranger Things and not Paw Patrol, for example.
Yeah, and we take that for granted now, that your TV already knows what you've liked watching, and so it's telling you, hey, this is the first thing I'm going to put up when you open up whatever streaming service you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is great. Like, that is genuinely great. But there are a few reasons to be concerned. So firstly, most people have no idea how much data is being collected on them. So, when you set up a device, you'll log in, you'll scroll down a huge list of terms and conditions that most people will just never read and agree to. And one of those is often that you're opting into automated content recognition. And then once you've often inadvertently opted in, it's really hard to opt out. And the thing is, you don't know who your detailed user profile is being sold to, how widely it's being shared, if it's actually being properly anonymized, and then also how securely it's stored. That creates a number of risks, and people just aren't really aware of what those risks are.
Kat Marks is my guest here on Nightlife. My name's Bern Young and you're on ABC Radio. Perhaps you're already living in the future and you've got the smart home. Maybe this is putting you off the smart home. I'm not sure. We set this up with the Jetsons, of course. And I mentioned Black Mirror, which is a much, more recent and darker view of the future. You mentioned that allergy to tomatoes, for instance, and, the home robot knowing about you and not sending you, those recipes. But then somewhere I see a dark future where it purposely sends me the tomato recipes, Kat. So what do you think? Are we heading for the Jetsons or Black Mirror?
The Jetsons is probably an overly optimistic vision of the future, but at the same time, Black Mirror is overly negative. I think the premise of the show and most of the episodes is that it provides a vision of the worst case scenarios for technology. So I think that smart home technology offers huge benefits, and they're especially big benefits from an inclusion perspective. So the people who are going to be impacted the most are people with mobility issues, and then people who are doing the larger share of domestic labor, which tends to be women. So I think it's going to be a really exciting space over the next couple of years, and I'm excited to see what's announced on the 6th of January. At the same time, the risks are real. So I think it's important that the government plays a regulatory role to make sure consumers are protected. And the Attorney General, Michelle Rowland, has signalled that upcoming changes to the Privacy Act will address data privacy and the responsible use of AI, which is a great step forward. And in the meantime, I think it's just really important that, consumers are savvy, make sure they know what they're buying and they know what they're signing up to so that they can be protected.
Yeah, so interesting. Kat Marks is a data scientist at Embers Advisors. She's got a master's degree in public policy at Harvard Kennedy School of Government. She's been giving us a glimpse into the future of our homes as we set sail for another new year. 2026 is here. Thanks so much, Kat.
Thanks so much for having me, Bern.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/